Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, well, hello everybody. My name is Lamara Haynes, and I'm in for Teresa Rafer tonight with Blog Talk Radio on Black Power. Our show today is going to be about, I'm also with Jessen Fox.
Hello.
Our show today is going to be about understanding privilege and the use of speech within activism communities. All right, well, I assume I'm reconnected. Hello, everybody. My name is Lamara Haynes, as I said before. Sorry for the technical difficulties. This is my first time doing any kind of podcast. And first times are always the hardest, I suppose.
It can be difficult.
So, Jessen, do you want to ask me questions or how do you want to go about it?
Yeah, so I think that what we're going to talk about is within any sort of social movement or activist spaces, you know, we're dealing with a lot of people who are sort of on different spectrum or on different levels of the spectrum of privilege. And understanding that though in some ways you might be disadvantaged in some way, it's still important to be cognizant of privilege that you might have that someone else might have. For example, men of color might have more privilege than a woman of color, and recognizing that even though there's things that are difficult for you, you still should be aware of what you have that other people don't have. Do you feel like that's something that you want to talk about today?
Yeah, I think that would be great.
What are one of the biggest things that you see when someone who doesn't have what we think of as like the full spectrum of privilege, as someone like me is an able, great, someone who might not have quite as much, but still makes things harder for people who have less privilege?
Well, I think that there's, there's limitations on everything, right? I think understanding privilege is great and useful and a way to eventually become radicalized, but I also think that radicalized, I guess by that I mean realizing that the system we live in that puts profit over people, capitalism, is a system that was inherently built to keep other people who are working, workers like myself and you. We have to, you know, have a job, we have to go to that job, work 8 to 5, and be able to continuously reproduce ourselves as workers every day, 5 days a week. For some people, it's way more than that. But let's just say 5 days a week in order to be able to do life, in order to be able to have food, resources, and we know that people who do those things aren't necessarily guaranteed food and resources and like the pursuit of happiness, whatever the case is. So one, I think we need to understand that privilege is working within a system in which many people are disadvantaged or are underprivileged. But that is, there's levels to everything, right? So you just mentioned you're straight, cis, het, white male living in the U.S. You have a lot of mobility in society, whether it's social, economic, geographical. You have a fair amount of mobility. But for somebody like myself who is not male, who's female, or who recognizes that as themselves as a woman, that puts me in a position of less privileged because the way in which capital has been built, it's been built to really ostracize and push female voices and labor and existence to the back burner while, you know, propping up male voices. Even though key movements like the civil rights movement or Occupy Wall Street, which also turned into Occupy Portland, the right to vote here for indigenous people, which I mean wasn't passed until 1924. But either way, these movements were all really propelled by women, but we don't have mass representation of women. You know, when you think about, for instance, when people think about the Black Panther movement, for instance, they think about the Panthers men with the black berets, the black leather suit, but they don't necessarily think about the rank and file women, the rank and file women meaning the women on the street who did like the daily work, who staffed the lunch programs, who, you know, educated people and those in their community about the struggle for black liberation. Those people, those women are not the people we think of being the face of the movement, even though really they're the backbone of the movement.
Yeah, and I mean, I think today, hopefully, and I think what we really want right now is we have women in the movement who started the Black Lives Matter movement. You know, the podcast that we're doing right now for Teresa, one of the leading activists in Portland, and really making sure that those people get their due credit, where through a lot of movements that we've had in history, the male figure has been sold as the main leader, often because within that time, those were the people who were allowed to speak. Who are they going to put in front of a podium? They're probably going to put a man. And that's who's going to get their recognition. So, but what do you think, do you feel like women right now are getting enough recognition for the things that they're doing?
No. I don't think so. I mean, just the other day there was a panel that I went to about why Black Lives Matter, hosted by a Black student union, and half the people on the panel didn't even know, actually more than half the people on the panel didn't know the name of the women, the three women who started the Black Lives Matter movement. I mean, they had like Opal, Tometi, Patrice Cullors, and Alicia Garza, like people on the panel, both male and female, or didn't actually know who the women were or like what their stake was or that they even started the movement. And I thought that was very disturbing. One, to have a panel where the people who are on the panel don't actually know about the origins of the topic. That's always a bit bizarre, I think. That's a fair assessment. So, no, I don't think that you know, women in any movement or women in general get any type of shine unless they're really, you know, pushing the same, like, mainstream white supremacist, imperialist, occupier American mentality like Hillary Clinton or Tina Fey and her, what's her sidekick's name, Amy Poehler?
I don't know if that's her sidekick, but you feel like unless women assimilate to a certain degree, they're not going to get their due credit.
No, and I think that if you're constantly looking for any kind of due credit from a system that was meant to oppress you and not give you any credit, you're going to be screwed. You're literally screwing yourself. Like, you're making things 10 times harder for you. And I think that's also something that I am trying to work on is realizing that if I'm constantly seeking justification from a system that was made to ensure that as a person of color, as an immigrant, as a first generation, as whatever other status that underprivileges me in the society, if I'm constantly looking to that system to give me any kind of big ups, like, it's going to be extremely difficult for me to feel happy or even survive.
Yeah, what I know for me, I definitely do my best to be aware of these of the female activists, and I think in Portland, I'm lucky to have a lot of exposure to female activists because they lead a whole ton of our events, and I think that's really great, and I like seeing that, but I also notice one of the things that happens, and this probably happens with male and female leaders, but what I hear back from activists is people give them props and then don't try to get involved in any way, sort of leaving their leaders very stranded. You know, they'll come up to someone, say, oh man, the speech that she gave is so inspiring. And then if they respond, oh, well, can you be at the next event? Like, we really need bodies there. People don't follow through. And that makes it especially hard to push the movement along where people are invested up to the degree of inspiration, and that's as far as they'll go. Can you talk about that at all?
I think that's a good question, but I don't really know how to combat that. I think people are extremely tired in their day-to-day lives as workers, as wives, as people, for women especially, you have to work within the household and outside of the household
yeah.
in order to like make any kind of living. And obviously women aren't really compensated for, what is it called, in-home labor. So, I mean, to a certain extent, I understand, like, the question and why, like, people not showing up when they say they're going to show up. But also as a person who does, like, activism work and living as a Black woman in society is extremely tiring. So I think for certain people, when they say, oh, I can't, you know, come to this thing, but I support you, I try to be understanding of that. I mean, like, if somebody who's, like, rich and well-off, like, and also happens to be white and male and cis is like, no, yeah, I'm not going to go to that protest. I don't have the time. Then I give them a bit of a side eye and be like, what?
Yeah.
But for a lot of people, like, life is hard. But also, Black people being marginalized is hard. People of color not getting any nominations at the Oscars is hard. So there's so many things you have to really prioritize, how to keep yourself healthy, but also figure out how do you push the movement along? It's not going to just show up on its own, grow
yeah.
on its own.
Yeah, that's definitely true. It's not going to happen on its own. I guess I'm curious more if we want to bring it back to within the different levels of privilege. How can we so if someone comes up and they say that they want to do a thing, but maybe they feel like something or someone who is more marginalized than them brings up an issue that they're not totally invested in, and they feel, well, they want to be involved, but that's too divisive of an issue, and that pushes them away. What do you say to those sort of, you know, when we were coming up for the description with this podcast, that was one of the things that I put in there, was like the part-time consciousness.
But then I erased it because I didn't know how to actually do the podcast. But
true. We're struggling a lot here. We don't even know if we're actually recording right now.
I hope we are.
I hope so, too. If we're not, we're having a great conversation in this room alone.
What was your question again? I'm sorry.
So, So I the question that I want to pose to you and just for us to talk about is when someone who is part of a particular movement, let's say Black Lives Matter, Black Power, the whole kitchen caboodle on those issues, and maybe someone wants to bring in, they want to make something too here. They say, all right, I want to talk about blackness, but also gender and how that affects things. Because, you know, for someone like you, who's a black woman, you have that extra layer that a black man doesn't have. And when someone says, oh, let's just focus on this issue, bringing in that other issue makes it too divisive. Yeah, I am referencing back to something that happened that has to do with everyone's favorite grandpa right now. Yeah, why don't we let's pause on that. Let's just talk about that Bernie thing, because we had talked about that earlier this week. For people that don't know,
Okay, we're getting callers and I'm trying to figure out how to let like
oh.
listen to them. So
Yeah.
if you're calling, super sorry, I'm trying to figure out how to work everything to ensure that
We do care about you.
yeah, we really do. It'd be also nice to be able to talk to you, but anyway, I'm trying to figure out how to work this at the same time.
Yeah. Well, so I'll talk to the people a little bit while you work on that. So Bernie Sanders, who is the 22nd, I think. Bernie Sanders is, you know, running for president with the on the Democratic side of the ticket. You know, for a lot of people, they're really jazzed up about his message. In a lot of ways, he has a really great message. Certainly better than his Republican opponents, excuse me, as well as Hillary Clinton. And while Bernie is saying a lot of great things, there are certain things that Bernie leaves people out on the dust for a little bit. One of the things that has come up and people are talking about is the question of reparations for descendants of African slaves in America. That was whether reparations should be allotted or not was brought up to Bernie. And I've only read the quote. I haven't heard him say it. But he was not for the idea, and he used the term divisive. He's saying that it would be too divisive, and he wanted to focus more on issues that maybe necessarily affected everyone, like unemployment and income equality. And I think that definitely, you know, I can only speak to a certain degree as a white man, but the vibe that I got for a lot of people, that really kind of stung, especially because you expect that sort of thing from establishment politicians and from on either side, whether Republican, Democrat, and but Bernie as the flag bearer right now for the political revolution, in quotes, is someone that people are really going to scrutinize because they say, all right, you say you're down with me, how down are you really? And I think it stung that he was not in favor of reparations. You know, there was a piece that I haven't read yet by Ta-Nehisi Coates. I always screw his first name up.
Ta-Nehisi or Ta-Nehisi?
Ta-Nehisi.
I'm not sure I have to
Well,
look it
Mr.
up.
Coates is a great writer, and he writes a lot of one-off pieces. And a few years back, he wrote a piece called The Case for Reparations. So he just wrote within the past few days a response to Bernie not being in favor of reparations. And can you speak to that article a little bit?
Oh yeah, I read the whole.
What's that book called?
A lot of people don't like it because when you say something that's considered controversial, people tend to be, feel some kind of way about it. But anyway, Mr. Coates wrote this article, in my opinion, the article is scrutinizing Bernie Sanders, his stance on reparations and reparations would be divisive, which, I mean.
The people that can't see, Lamar just rolled their eyes really big at that.
You're a linguist. Can you explain what the word divisive means?
Gosh, now I have to live up to the title of linguist. Thank you, Portland State University. So divisive basically is what we would use as a verb for something that divides things. I think what Bernie's trying to say there is that there is too many people that he represents that are against the idea of reparations for him to endorse it, and that him endorsing it is not worth losing those people. I think that's what he's saying when he's talking about being divisive. And, you know, I think for a lot of people, they agree with that. They think that there's certain things that if you can't get everything that you want, that's okay as long as you get some of what you want. But I think that a lot of black people, if I overextend myself to speak to them at this moment, feel like they've heard that forever. They've always heard, well, I know this isn't the whole bowl, but here's a spoonful, or here's a few spoonfuls of what you want. And people are fed up, and they're saying, no, if you want to be the guy that says he's super down, and you're 100% our dude, and for the first time you finally have a candidate who really represents you, and you really, if you aren't going to be everything that we want, you have to be ready for us to criticize the things that you are not. Looks like, are we getting any groundwork?
Maybe you can fiddle around with it, maybe even.
Sure, well, why don't you talk a little bit more about that while I try to examine this podcast thing?
Well, I think what's important to realize is that
I think we might not be able to take any callers today. Like, that might be an unfortunate thing.
I don't even know if we're actually live.
Well, we're praying that we are. If you have me or Lamar's phone number and you're listening right now, send us a text and tell us you're listening.
The thing is that I feel that people, in general, I think the working class has been really, really, really downtrodden for the last, how long has Obama been president? Almost 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
For the last 8 years.
I mean, I would say longer than just Obama.
But this is what happens. Vision of hope in Barack Obama after Bush no longer was president. He had served his time. People felt a beacon of hope with President Obama. In the first 4 years of his presidency, things that were supposed to happen, closing of Guantanamo Bay, more jobs, higher wages, deploying of soldiers out of the Middle East, those things didn't happen, and people became disenchanted. But 2012, new elections coming, I think there was a bit of a surge of hope. And people felt that, you know, Obama 08 hope again in 2012. But now, as we've seen a plethora of issues emerge, like police brutality, the income gap, all these things becoming more and more intense, people are fed up. I think that's a fair thing to say. I think that's a fair assessment. I think that's a fair assessment. I think that's a fair thing to say. But now, and Obama didn't go after the banks. He bailed them out. We all know that. People lost their homes, people that you know.
So everybody was upset and has been upset, and we've been kind of waiting, I feel like, for something better to happen. And the better thing that has happened, in a lot of people's opinion is Bernie Sanders running for office. And, you know, he was the underdog, but, you know, he's making, you know, rounds in Iowa and New Hampshire, and people are like, wow, okay, this could really be somebody who actually gets into office. Like, you know, since 1991, it seems like he's really, you know, hasn't really changed. He still wanted the working class to be successful. And so people feel really like, you know, like, yeah, I can nod my head to that. And I can too. I think Bernie is, it's great. He's done good in his debates. The fact that he challenges Hillary Clinton on the things that she says and the Democratic Party on the things that they say and have done and their ineffectiveness is really important. I mean, as my friend Alyssa said, the Democratic Party is weak, right? And the Republicans are just really not an option. So in that case, Bernie looks pretty good. But I think just because something looks pretty good doesn't mean we stop at, oh, okay, yeah, he's pretty good, and leave it at that. I think there should always be people who are striving for more from our politicians. And I think that's something that has recently gotten me in trouble, because really Bernie Sanders is great, but the fact that he finds reparations divisive is problematic to me, because the fact that Black people were enslaved in this country and literally built this country along with, you know, the massacre and removal of Indigenous people from their homelands, built this country and started the modern inception of capitalism, like, America was built on my back, I could say, not my back specifically, but people who looked a lot like me. And to say that paying us back for the free labor, for the pillaging, the raping, the destruction of the Black body, mind, and soul is divisive, that's BS. That's not true. Like, if you, like, in order to address the income gap, in order to address why Black students are failing out of school, why Black men are consistently profiled, why Black women and men and Black people in general are stopped and frisked more, are killed more by police, like, go through hell on a daily basis, we need to look back at America's history and we need to make that right. Like, nobody, like, seems to think that it was divisive when World War II vets came back after, you know, fighting across overseas to, you know, win the Great War, and they were given money by the government to, like, purchase homes and really, you know, start to build their lives. These were white veterans, white and white Jewish veterans as well, but that didn't happen for Black vets or vets of color. And why is that the case? Because racism in America is a type of beast that makes understanding the struggle of Black people and people of color, like, impossible. Yes. For those who are in power. And if you, I really, like, if you're not really down with reparations as a candidate, like, I can't really get 100% behind you. Like, I don't care who you are. I'm sure Barack Obama in 2008 or even now isn't for reparations 100% or feels like he can't say that, but I'm not down with Obama 100%. And I think that people need to stop acting as though, like, Barack Obama and Bernie Sanders have made, like, huge leaps and gains for American society, because they have not. Everything that people in America have gotten has been because people have rebelled and said enough and then made enough noise and started enough shit to the powers that be looked at us and then fixed whatever inequity they were practicing at the time.
Certain groups of people who were able to get, like, VA stuff and get the money after World War II. And one of the things that is really interesting is examining the way Jews who had been a ghettoized group who along with other minorities, like black folk in the U.S., like any Latinos in the U.S., had been, had any Asian folk, people who had been on the bottom rung. Jews were right in there in a lot of ways with them, but they got the money after World War II, and they got the help. And we really saw huge change with that and how Jews were able to live their lives. So I think that is good evidence that being given that boost can really help a group of people. And you see so many people that I feel that don't really examine these issues very, very in depth. They wonder why black folk live a ghettoized life and why all of these things happen. But I think if you look to a group of people like Jewish folk, my family's Jewish, this sort of reparations we're seeing, the money that we got post-World War II that allowed people to move out of the cities, move into the suburbs, start a suburbanized life, get enough money to open up a store, get enough money to pay their way through college to become doctors, lawyers, and so on, that worked for this one group of people. And if we took the time to help another group of people with that, I think that you would see the same results. And it's not a huge thing to ask. I think that you see the pay, you get a payoff that is tenfold what you initially put in. I think what Jewish people have been able to contribute to this country since World War II, because of what basically the government decided, okay, Jews count as white, so we will give them the things that we've been giving other white people, like a huge shift in what they're able to do. And I think that would happen the exact same way. Looks like I'm having nobody. Yeah, I think I am also skeptical. When I was looking at the program on the iPad, it didn't look like we were even signed in. I don't know what is 15 minutes.
I think it means that we've been on for 15 minutes.
We've definitely been on for longer than 15 minutes. That is definitely true that we have been on for longer than 15 minutes. I have no idea how this thing really works. But for anybody who is listening, we really appreciate you listening to our real first attempt. It's definitely a work in progress, but we enjoy being given this opportunity by Teresa to get to speak our minds and contribute to some of this multimedia that we have going here. What's something else that you want to talk about?
I don't even know if we're... It's hard for me to focus on what we're wanting to talk about if I don't think this is working.
I can tell. I see that. Well, there's a few things that I've had on my mind, and maybe I can bounce those things off of you. I think... I think what one of the big things is, you mentioned the Oscars a little bit, and also just other figures in media. Right now we have had, a really big issue with, the way I see it, people going halfway on things. Do you want to talk about any people in the media that you feel have also gone halfway on addressing an issue?
I think we have been the three callers.
Perhaps. Do you want to talk about this or?
I'm trying to focus on this. As I said, I just didn't want to do it.
Sure.
What's my name? It was working. Like, stop.
No, Should I exit out of it? Should I?
I think you should exit.
I'll hang the phone up. All right, so I think we're gonna try to hang up right now and then enter back into the podcast in a little bit. So thank you for listening. We're gonna try to get back to you as soon as we can.